Syrian troops have struck back at foreign-backed insurgents who've stormed the provincial capital of Raqqa, close to the Turkish border. What does this development mean for the insurgency? Will President Bashar al-Assad be able to bring the battle to an end, as he's claimed? This is The Debate.
Foreign-backed insurgents firing into the air in jubilation after storming the provincial capital of Raqqa in northern Syria. Soon after the militants entered Raqqa, the government forces began striking back. Syrian warplanes bombed Raqqa's intelligence headquarters, which were being held by the militants. Pro-government sources have said the Syrian army is targeting the position of the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Nusra Front in the city. The militants have said they have captured the governor of Raqqa and the head of the Ba'ath Party office there. Meanwhile, most residents of Raqqa fled to Deir al-Zor and other Syrian cities before the arrival of the insurgents. The recent surge in violence in Syria has caused serious damage to the country. Damascus has said many historic monuments have been demolished by the militants. It has accused foreign governments backing the insurgents of adding fuel to the fire with the aim of destroying the country's infrastructure. Saudi Arabia, another supporter of the militants, has said again that they must be given arms. This is while Riyadh is said to be buying plane loads of arms from the Balkans and sending them to insurgents through Syria's two neighbors, Jordan and Turkey. Both these countries are siding with the insurgents. But it seems that Syria's enemies have failed to export violence to all parts of the Arab nation. This is the port city of Latakia, the hometown of President Bashar al-Assad, where it's business as usual.
May Allah bless our President Bashar al-Assad, bless those government forces that are protecting the civilians.
President Bashar al-Assad takes the whole Syria as Latakia. He will defend for the whole country, not abandoning Damascus or other places. Damascus is the national base and capital. He will attach more importance to Damascus than his hometown.
Assad has struck an optimistic note in his latest remarks on the situation in his country. He said the, quote, conspiracy against Syria is nearing its end. Assad maintained that the country has emerged victorious in its battle against the insurgents as they are fighting for survival. Assad has defied all predictions by his enemies that he will soon fall. Observers believe that the insurgency in Syria is part of a foreign project to bring about regime change in Syria and ultimately change the geopolitical map of the Middle East in favor of the West and its regional allies.
Now joining us on this edition of The Debate in London is Mr. Sharif Nashashibi, Chairman of Arab Media Watch. Welcome, sir. Welcome as well to our guest in Washington, Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian. Welcome. Now, my first question to our guest in London, Mr. Nashashibi. Insurgents, including the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Nusra Front, Mr. Nashashibi, in Raqqa, close to the Turkish border. Some are already suggesting that the militants are trying to transfer that city into a new Benghazi and they're attempting to form a transitional government there. Do you think, however, that's too soon to say and whether even that's possible?
I think it is too soon to say. I mean, the town has just been reportedly taken by rebels. And now, as this report showed, you know, the government is launching a counteroffensive. So it really is too early to tell, and the fighting there is mirrors fighting in other parts of the country where the rebels seem unable to hold on to territory, so they use guerrilla tactics where they'll take over territory, and then, you know, that territory will be relinquished again, and then they'll strike somewhere else. So the situation is constantly very fluid. So it really is too early to tell what will happen in Raqqa and indeed in other places in the country.
Okay, and now Dr. Tarpley, let's have your view on this as well. We're hearing that the U.S. State Department under John Kerry, the fact that they have come up with new help, they say, for the insurgents. They've come up during that Rome conference with a new financial aid. They're saying that they're trying to shift their focus to helping the insurgents establish an alternative government on Syrian territory and then recognize it as the legal government. They say that this would help them legitimize the transfer of weapons, and it also allow the U.S. to directly employ airstrikes or Patriot anti-missile batteries against Assad's forces. Do you think that that's true?
Well, first of all, the tremendous political vulnerability of these rebels, who are, after all, heavily salted with al-Qaeda and al-Nusra terrorists, is that when they take over parts of Syria, their administration, their rule, their domination is so oppressive and so incompetent that the populations turn against them. In other words, it's not just a military reason that prevents them from holding territory and holding cities, is that when they come on the scene, their extremist and fanatic ideas are anathema. And remember, most of these fighters in the hardcore main force units of the rebels are foreigners. The foreign fighters are overwhelmingly bearing the brunt of the fighting. So there's tremendous disarray there. On the other hand, we now have John Forbes Kerry, the Boston Brahmin, the member of this infamous skull and bones Freemasonic death cult. And with Kerry, we can see a new element of disarray in the coalition attacking Syria. Remember, Kerry is famous as a flip-flopper. He's somebody who'll tell you one thing today and another thing tomorrow, or maybe even another thing in 5 minutes. We saw him in Saudi Arabia yesterday and today in Qatar. And there's obviously friction, because Kerry is saying the United States, for political reasons, cannot openly deliver sophisticated weapons to al-Nusra terrorists because the State Department has condemned them. It's a violation of U.S. law. Whereas Saud al-Faisal of Saudi Arabia and Mr. Thani there in Qatar are saying, we don't care, give them all the missiles they want, and if airliners are shot down, we don't care.
Well, let's put that case to Mr. Nasser Shibi in London. Of course, when it comes to the issue of al-Qaeda and terrorists, some people were speaking with us earlier on from Damascus. They were saying that civilians in that specific city which has been captured have been fleeing. They are afraid because of the fact that terrorists are among those insurgents. So do you think that the United States, when it says we're giving non-lethal aid, it's not changing anything on the ground? It cannot distinguish the militants from the terrorists. Some have even been suggesting, Mr. Nasser Shibi, that right now the so-called Free Syrian Army actually needs those terrorists and al-Qaeda fighters because of their experience, and that tacitly the U.S. could be supporting that.
There is no evidence to suggest that the U.S. is arming al-Nusra directly. I mean, on the contrary, they've put them on a terrorist list. I think from the point of view of the opposition, the strength of these jihadist extremist fighters in Syria is the most worrying aspect, because it is diluting the goals and aspirations of the revolution, of a popular revolution. And those people, these foreign fighters on either side of the conflict, they are not there necessarily for the interests of Syrians. They're there for their own interests and on their own agendas. And I do agree with the other speaker that we're not just talking about Syria. We're talking about Iraq and other countries where these extremists are so medieval in their rule that they are thrown off by the local populations. So as much as, unfortunately, at the moment, that they are militarily strong compared to other fighting components of the opposition, they are not a natural component of Syrian society. And I don't think their presence and their oppressive way of rule will last in Syria, as it neither did in Iraq. But it's a mistake to represent the revolution as being predominantly or solely an effort by foreign al-Qaeda-linked fighters. This started off as a popular revolution, and these fighters, because they are militarily more capable, they are being given a bigger prevalence. But this should not take away from the fact that this is still a popular revolution that is under threat from being hijacked by these extremists.
Right. So, Dr. Tapi, would you describe it as such as well, that there is a revolution that's being undermined now, that's facing the threat of being hijacked by these terrorists?
The research I was able to do on the ground in Syria in November 2011, especially in Homs and in Banyas along the ocean, is that from the very beginning, you had some people coming out, maybe with some placards that they wanted democratic rights and they didn't like the Ba'ath Party and so forth. But from the word go, from the very beginning, there were violent elements, terrorist elements that were seated inside those crowds. So there was no idyllic halcyon day when everything was peaceful. The shooting and the killing was there from the very beginning. And it didn't start from the Syrian army. The Syrian army, as I found in Banyas, had been ordered, don't shoot at anybody. And a lot of people from the Syrian army depot in Banyas had been killed precisely because they didn't want to shoot at the several hundred fanatics that were that were attacking them. As far as the U.S. is concerned, there's a double element here. It may well be that the weapons coming in are paid for by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, maybe. But it's clear they're coming in through Incirlik Air Force Base. It's a NATO Air Force Base in Turkey dominated by the by the U.S., coming in through various ports along the Mediterranean in Turkey. And the officers who are directing the traffic, the logistics officers, the beach commanders, if you will, those are people from the CIA and the U.S. Special Forces. And I simply cannot believe, with the track record of the CIA, that they're not making sure that Nusra gets the good weapons, because otherwise the entire rebellion might collapse, right?
So, and that brings us to the next question of the delivery of weapons and how Turkey is being used. But before I put that question to our guest in London, I'm just being told that we're going to take a look now at the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page, and we'll be back. Stay with us.
We have posted this on Press TV's Facebook page. Will the tactic of hit and run benefit the insurgents, or will it just destroy the country? Many comments have been received. Muazzo Sabo, from the way things are going, foreign forces are bent on destroying Syria. If the insurgents do not change, we are going to see another Iraq in Syria. Omphil Khomo, I believe the hit and run tactic will only destroy Syria, because the terrorists will storm a certain place. They will destroy the area, and once the army diverts its attention to the area, they will go and hit a different location. Yasamin al-Din, is the same story as Iraq. The mission is destroying the big countries in the Middle East for the sake of the tiny entity of Israel. Obreis Islam Mataka, the unrest is now heading into a civil war which might last for decades. Salahuddin Hakim, this is a no-win war for both the insurgents and the Syrian government. Saudi, Qatar, Turkey, the US, the UAE, and other sponsoring countries can just stop wasting their limited funds, because the divided rebels will never rule Syria.
Comments there by some of our viewers on our Facebook page. Let's go right to London, I guess, Mr. Nasha Shibi. Right now, a lot of people are speaking about a solution for the crisis that's facing Syrians, especially the civilians being hardly hit. Now, the US's solution seems to be, based on what it announced in the Friends of Syria group meeting, we still have to give more cash, we still have to give more training to the militants, and the militants do need those weapons that are being sent in from Saudi Arabia, from Turkey, from Qatar. So a lot of people are saying that this will only create more violence. Do you think that this is the right solution?
Unfortunately, foreign backers on both sides, and you know, let's be clear here. Let's be fair and balanced. This is happening on both sides. There are foreign fighters in Syria on both sides. There are foreign backers arming both sides and financing both sides. So let's make this clear. Let's not be so one-sided here. This is a problem for Syria in general. Foreign parties' involvement in Syria is out of their own agendas, and each party in Baqa has its own agenda. This is the problem. The reason why this is happening and continues to happen is because any talk of diplomacy, everyone's talking about diplomacy, but there is no formula, there is no agreed formula to make this work. Lakhdar Brahimi has so far proven incapable of bringing the two sides together. His predecessor, Kofi Annan, likewise.
So who do you hold responsible?
There is no common ground. Every time, you know, both sides.
Who do you hold responsible for this diplomacy not working?
Look, ultimately, I hold the regime in Syria responsible for having cracked down so brutally on a popular revolution that wanted simply the dignity and freedom to choose their own destinies. This crackdown led to the militarization of the conflict and the situation we face now. If he'd reacted differently, this wouldn't have happened. So ultimately, they bear responsibility. That is not to say, though, that I am deeply concerned by the methods and tactics used by elements of the opposition. I am not here to defend war crimes committed by anyone, but they are happening on both sides, and it's the people that are suffering.
Okay, so right now we hear Bashar Assad saying, Mr. Tarpley, that we're ready for talks. We've asked all of the opposition, he says, we haven't been categorizing them, to come up and start talking with us. So what do you think is stopping this diplomacy from happening? And do you agree with our guest there that there's foreign backers and foreign fighters on both sides of the conflict affecting the situation?
Concerning the foreign fighters, we have to remember Syria is a sovereign state. It is a member state of the United Nations. The sovereign government of Syria has every right to ask for assistance from other countries, be it Russia, be it Iran, or so forth. The U.S. presence in South Vietnam, let's say, was there. The legal basis of it was that the South Vietnamese government invited the United States to provide military assistance. If Damascus does that vis-a-vis Moscow or Tehran, that is perfectly legal and perfectly normal. On the other hand, it is a breach of international peace and security for countries like Saudi Arabia or Qatar or the US or NATO to foment, to ship in weapons and foreign fighters to create artificially a civil war inside such a country. And this is what has gone on. So I would say the main precondition for peace is the departure of foreign fighters and a cessation of the arms deliveries coming in primarily through Turkey, also through Jordan, through Lebanon, and some perhaps from the Kurdish entity in Iraq, or maybe less there, but to stop those arms deliveries and for the foreign fighters to be kicked out.
Okay, Mr. Nashashibi, you have something to say, I believe.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This argument that a sovereign government is entitled to this kind of assistance to brutally crack down on its population is absolute nonsense. By that logic, sir, you would then be supporting the U.S. arming of Israel against its oppression of the Palestinians. You would be supporting Bahrain's call for other Gulf countries to come in and crack down on Bahraini demonstrators. This is not an argument. I'm sorry. Sovereign governments should be held just as responsible for the well-being of their people. They are not entitled to bring in weapons and fighters to pursue their own agendas any more than militant groups are. Otherwise, you are supporting human rights abuses, not just by the Syrian regime, but by many other oppressive regimes in the region and beyond. This is not an argument.
Mr. Tarpley.
The what is involved here is a political judgment. Who is the aggressor? Who started it? The opprobrium goes to the party that begins the hostilities. And in the case of Syria, this is clear. It's part of this destabilization of the entire Arab world, the so-called Arab Spring. And it is done by shipping in these foreign fighters. And I mentioned, in Homs and in Banias, I was able to talk to people who were present on the very first days. There were terrorists, and some of them were foreign fighters, from the very beginning. So the aggressors are these foreign powers.
Okay, that's not the case. That's just not true.
Okay, Mr. Nashashibi,
that's
now,
not true.
Okay, the question now here is, we did have Mr. Al-Khatib, who's head of the Syrian National Opposition Coalition, as you know. He was saying earlier on that he is ready for dialogue, although that call wasn't supported by all of the opposition. But when we do have these calls being made, when Syria is saying that I am ready to call for dialogue, and a lot of analysts are saying, why should democracy be imposed militarily on the Syrian people when they can decide on their democracy through ballot boxes? Why shouldn't foreign forces depart and these arms stop reaching Syria for this political solution to start to work?
Democracy shouldn't be imposed, but if Syria was already a democratic nation, there wouldn't have been this revolution. We have had one-party totalitarian rule in Syria for decades, and it is precisely this issue that people, simply for speaking out, for wanting to choose the way they live and who leads them, for being tortured and killed for that, this is why people rose up. If there was already a democracy in Syria, there'd be no need for a revolution, and there would be no need for any foreign interference or even any domestic backing for this kind of movement. But the fact is that Syria has been a brutal, repressive dictatorship. There should be no defending that. And of course, you know, everyone should want to have democracy peacefully. But the fact is the Syrian regime has proven utterly incapable and unwilling
to give Syrians
that kind of democracy. Yeah, and that is why there was a revolution.
Mr. Nashashibi, you're saying that we have to be balanced on both sides here. The fact is we've got Al-Qaeda on one side, we've got Israel on one side, and we've got the Syrian government on the other. We have seen President Assad come out and say, I agree that our nation needs reform. I'm willing to bring about those reform. I'm willing to bring about a transitional government and bring about elections. So isn't that President Assad accepting the what he calls legitimate demands of the revolution, as you call it?
Not at all. He gave an interview to the Sunday Times, which was published on Sunday, 2 days ago, where he said that he would not talk to the armed opposition unless they lay down their arms first, which is unrealistic. And he said he would not consider stepping down. So if he's not going to consider stepping down, what is the point of having negotiations where he still feels that he should be running the country? I mean, this is a non-starter.
Okay, so Dr. Tarpley, would you say that the condition for these insurgents to lay down arms is unrealistic right now?
I think it's the only possible thing that Assad can say, because otherwise you'd be inviting the total destruction of the country. Look, the alternative in Syria is not Assad or democracy. The alternative is Assad or chaos, terrorism, mass murder, failed state, rump states, endless civil war, and so forth. The only possibility
this is the
of saving
argument
a semblance
of every
of civilization
Arab dictator in the region
to keep the Assad administration in power. Well, since we've got Libya to look at, maybe those arguments have to be revisited and taken more seriously. If you want to have the collapse of civilization like you've got it in Libya, then al-Nusra is the way to go.
Yeah. Okay, I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd like to thank both of our guests with us on this edition of the debate, Mr. Sharif Nashashibi, chairman of Arab Media Watch, with us there live in London and in Washington, Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being on the debate, and thank you for staying with us. From me, Homa Lesgi, until our next program, goodbye.